The Truth News Network. Maybe the scariest thing there is today is truth in media, especially the news. Get not only the news, but the truth in the news and nothing else. From TNN, the Truth News Network. Without the other guy's spin, here's your host, Dan Newman.
And today we're going to talk about much spin and much in the way of attempts to get to the truth. Hello, everyone. I'm Dan Newman. Welcome to Truth News Network. And getting started today talking about the truth. Truth from everywhere. Truth from politicians. And truth from the media. We're going straight to a snippet from an interview between former FBI Assistant Director Andrew McCabe and CNN's Anderson Cooper. Listen closely to this exchange.
Do you still believe the president could be a Russian asset?
I think it's possible. I think that's why we started our investigation, and I'm really anxious to see where Director Mueller concludes that.
We watch it all the time. A news story quotes unnamed sources that claim that the president might be a Russian agent. In this case, that source is named Andrew McCabe. Never mind McCabe is a proven liar. Never mind he is personally under investigation awaiting certain prosecution for committing at least one felony. Never mind he is alleging a major wrong against a sitting president, presenting no evidence. Never mind that McCabe and his fired mentor, James Comey, former FBI director, used that might be a Russian agent as a basis to begin the FBI probe of Trump and his organization that morphed into the current Mueller probe. 2 years old, $30 million of U.S. taxpayer money, and no evidence of the president doing anything wrong regarding any kind of collusion with Russia. All that matters is they think there might be evidence that proves that. Those allegations or suspicions, not evidence, were used to get the FISA court to authorize electronic surveillance of the Trump Organization. Providing fake and unproven evidence in a FISA application, folks, is a felony. Then there's this. A Supreme Court nominee was accused by a woman of sexual assault at a party some 30 years ago that caused her irreparable harm and psychological damage, while proving the nominee is unfit to serve in the Supreme Court. No witnesses, she stated, would testify on her behalf to prove those allegations would do so. No evidence, no witnesses. Her testimony nearly destroyed the life of a now-seated United States Supreme Court justice. Both of these are examples of exactly what Americans face daily in this instant 24/7 news environment in which we live. And the questions that arise from such stories seem to be unending. Who do we believe? Were the allegations true? If not all, which ones are true and which are false? And almost every time we face such questions, we must make a decision to believe or disbelieve all or portions of what we hear. But if we cannot be certain about elements of these and other stories, how can we make good, logical, and informed decisions? And such decisions are often monumental. Decisions of this magnitude can determine outcomes and do determine outcomes of national elections, like who the President of the United States is, our governors, mayors, U.S. senators, and congressmen. We must get it right. Unfortunately for Americans, we have no legal requirements that force absolute and accurate information from these national news sources or from any one individual or group. The First Amendment absolutely protects all individuals, corporations, and groups from liabilities associated with disseminating incorrect information. And it seems that the legal protection mentioned here encompasses everything, and that there is no requirement for the truth and no penalty for untruth. Wait a minute. There are libel laws, right? There certainly are, but obviously they are not, on the most part, very effective. So much so that most of these laws that have actual teeth in them are at the state level. And protection under the First Amendment gives illegitimate individuals and organizations a free pass for lying, most of the time. One would think defamation could be best handled in a uniform and universal way, best at the federal level, so that truthfulness would be a new and information requirement with stiff penalties for not being as portrayed. Alas, legal precedents regarding existing laws do not favor the truth, and that's wrong. So let's get some legislation passed that puts teeth into forcing truthfulness from our media. Whoops! There's that old First Amendment. Stories like this one are out there aplenty. This is a story. In the latest in a long line of attacks on freedom of the press, President Trump has once again threatened today to change libel laws to make it easier to sue news organizations, publishers, and others after the publication of an unflattering book. We are going to take a strong look at our country's libel laws so that when somebody says something that is false and defamatory about someone else, that person will have meaningful recourse in our courts, Trump said. Fortunately, there are two strong obstacles standing in his way. Chief among them is the First Amendment, which clearly protects freedom of the press. But the other main barrier is the inconvenient fact that there is no federal libel law for President Trump to use to bully Congress to change. Libel cases are based on state laws, which neither the president nor Congress has control over because of our nation's federalist system. That's from the ACLU website. We'll give you some specific thoughts on all this. But first, let's take a quick look at the legal history of defamation, how we got to where we are, and what defamation regarding truthfulness really is today. We're going to do all of that, and it's very important. So sit tight. We'll be right back at truthnewsnetwork.org.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-woo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
Election cycles come and go. White House reporters come and go. The truth is a diamond because it's forever.
TNN, the Truth News Network.
Your jeweler today is Dan Newman.
Well, your jeweler today is digging down deep to get to the truth of all of this lunacy and truthfulness in all kinds of areas of our government. Now, we're going to talk about, very quickly, the history of defamation laws in the U.S. and how they apply to us. This is very critical stuff. Follow with me as we talk about the origins of the United States defamation laws. They predate the American Revolution. They're that old. One influential case in 1734 involved John Peter Zenger and established precedent that the truth is an absolute defense against charges of libel. Previous English defamation law had not provided this guarantee. Though the First Amendment of the Constitution was designed to protect freedom of the press, for most of the history of the U.S., the Supreme Court failed to use it to rule on libel cases. Remember that. We're going to get back to that in our summary. This left libel laws based upon the traditional common law of defamation inherited from the English legal system mixed across the states. The 1964 case New York Times versus Sullivan, however, radically changed the nature of libel law in the U.S. by establishing that public officials could win a suit for libel only when they could prove the media outlet in question knew either that the information was wholly and patently false or that it was published with reckless disregard of whether it was false or not. How do you prove that? Later Supreme Court cases barred strict liability for libel and forbid libel claims for statements that are so ridiculous to be patently false. Recent cases have added precedent on defamation law and the internet. The First Amendment, we know this, it guarantees freedom of speech and freedom of the press. It provides defendants in the U.S. significantly more protection than the countries of the Commonwealth and elsewhere in Europe. Some variation exists among the several states to the extent that the state's legislature has passed statutes or its courts have handed down decisions affecting some parts inherited from the common law. Some states connect what constitutes slander and libel together into the same set of laws. Criminal libel is rarely prosecuted, but it exists on the books in many states and is constitutionally permitted in circumstances essentially identical to those where civil libel liability is constitutional. Defenses to libel that can result in dismissal before trial include the statement being one of opinion rather than fact, or being fair comment and criticism, though neither of these are absolute on the U.S. Constitution. Truth is an absolute defense against defamation in the U.S., meaning true statements cannot be defamatory. So, in that context, my question is, why don't they just tell the truth all the time and not worry about it? Most states recognize that some categories of false statements are considered to be defamatory. People making a defamation claim for these statements do not need to prove that the statement was defamatory. John Peter Zinger. In one of the most famous cases, New York City publisher John Peter Zinger was imprisoned for 8 months for printing attacks on the governor of the colony of New York. Zinger won his case and was acquitted by jury under the counsel of Andrew Hamilton. Governor Morris, a major contributor in the framing of the U.S. Constitution, said this, "The trial of Zinger was the germ of American freedom, the morning star of that liberty which subsequently revolutionized America." Zinger's case also established that libel cases, though they were civil rather than criminal cases, could be heard by a jury, which would have the authority to rule on the allegations and to set the amount of monetary damages awarded, if any. The First Amendment was designed specifically to protect freedom of the press. However, for most of the history of the U.S., the Supreme Court neglected to use it to rule on libel cases, and that's puzzling to me. This left libel laws, based upon the traditional common law of defamation inherited from the English legal system, mixed across the states. Then there's People versus Croswell. The Zinger case we just talked about did not establish a precedent. I don't understand that either. In 1804, Harry Croswell lost a libel suit in People versus Croswell when the Supreme Court of the state of New York refused to accept truth as a defense. The following year, the New York State Legislature changed the law to allow truth as a defense against a libel charge, breaking with English precedent under which the truthfulness of the statements alone is not a defense. Other states and the federal government then followed suit. And then the New York Times versus Sullivan. In 1964, the court issued an opinion in that case, dramatically changing the nature of libel laws in the U.S. In that case, the court determined the public officials could win a suit for libel only if they could demonstrate actual malice on the part of reporters or publishers. In that case, actual malice was defined as knowledge that the information was false or that it was published with reckless disregard of whether it was false or not. This decision was later extended to cover public figures, although the standards are still considerably lower in the case of private individuals. Defamation law in the U.S. is much less plaintiff-friendly than its counterpart in European and the Commonwealth countries, due to the enforcement of the First Amendment. One very important distinction today is that European and Commonwealth jurisdictions stick to a theory that every publication of a defamation gives rise to a separate claim, so that a defamation on the internet could be sued on in any country in which it was read, while American law only allows one claim for the primary publication. In the U.S., a thorough discussion of what is and what is not libel or slander is pretty difficult because the definition differs between different states. Some states join what constitutes slander and libel together into the same set of laws. Some have criminal libel laws on the books, though these are old laws which are very infrequently prosecuted. Washington State has held its criminal libel statute unconstitutional, applying the state and federal constitutions to the question. Most defendants in defamation lawsuits are newspapers or publishers. There's a big one going on right now, the Washington Post. You remember that one that happened with a young man from Kentucky and the Native American who got in his face. Those cases are involved in about twice as many lawsuits as our television station cases. Most plaintiffs, obviously, are corporations, business people, entertainers, and other public figures, and people involved in criminal cases, usually defendants or convicts, but sometimes victims as well. In no state can a defamation claim be successfully maintained if the allegedly defamed person is deceased. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996 generally protects from liability parties that create forums on the internet in which defamation occurs from liability for statements published by third parties, you know, like those bulletin boards or talk platforms. This has the effect of stopping all liability for statements made by people on the internet whose identity cannot be determined. All states except Arizona, Missouri, and Tennessee recognize that some categories of false statements are so innately harmful that they are considered to be defamatory per se, as they are written. In the common law tradition, damages for such false statements are presumed and do not have to even be proven. Statements are defamatory per se where they falsely impute to the plaintiff one or more of the following things. Allegations are injurious to another in their trade, their business, or profession. Allegations are of loathsome disease. Historically, that means leprosy and sexually transmitted disease. It also includes mental illness. They are allegations of unchastity, usually only in unmarried people and sometimes only in women. Allegations of criminal activity, sometimes only crimes of moral turpitude. On the federal level, there are no criminal defamation or insult laws in the U.S. at all. And I thought they were. Most of us did. However, 23 states and two territories have criminal defamation, libel, slander laws on the books, along with one state, Iowa, establishing defamation and libel as a criminal offense through case law without statutorily defined crimes. Those 23 states and territories are, just for your information, Alabama, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Wisconsin, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. That's the history of defamation law in the United States, and it has left a plethora of open doors, unanswered questions. And that in itself is why we find ourselves where we are today. And it goes to this, pretty much with total impunity, no worries about anyone taking serious legal action against you. You can pretty much say anything you want to about anyone in the United States or the world. And it doesn't have to be factual.
TNN, when only the truth will do.
TNN, the Truth News Network.
It's kind of fitting that we're talking about telling the truth today in our story. You know, the U.S. is one of the only countries remaining on Earth where harm that results from untruths that are stated or printed carry no consequences for those who initiate them. Don't get me wrong. Protection under the First Amendment is of the utmost importance to us all. It was crafted because those in the British Commonwealth could not say anything about the government or governmental wrongdoing or abuses without paying a horrible price just for telling the truth. But the unfettered ability to say or print pretty much anything about others with no accountability, that can be devastating. And it's pretty unrealistic. We see the horrors from such every day. What's that old saying? You can't put the genie back in the bottle, or you can't take back what you said. Those are both true. But is it realistic to such things as the circus of the Brett Kavanaugh SCOTUS nomination and confirmation, in which multiple people publicly defamed him with apparent lies? He could have missed the opportunity of a lifetime, for which he and thousands of other Americans study foreign law school and practice in the legal system and aspire to achieve, a seat on the United States Supreme Court. It is unimaginable to think that such action could legally occur simply because someone or some people, for the purposes of stopping another from such an achievement. Is it realistic to think that they could lie, fabricate false circumstances, and make unsubstantiated claims against someone, and could do so with no recourse whatsoever for what they said and what they're saying those things do to the person or persons they are attacking? I doubt our forefathers had that in mind when they crafted the First Amendment. So what can we do? The states listed above have acted on the fact that the federal government has done virtually nothing to protect Americans in this regard. Unfortunately, those protections are not the same from state to state, and on the federal level, they're unenforceable. Why hasn't Congress done something about this? Could it be they are afraid that any such federal legislation would be struck down at the Supreme Court? It might be. But those folks in Congress are pretty smart people. And guess what? Most of them are lawyers. Is it because they're afraid that they are incapable of crafting legislation that would protect innocent Americans from reprehensible talk, written or electronic allegations from those who don't have the truth, or have the truth and will not give it, or simply make up defamatory stories to hurt others? Hey, no doubt, freedom of speech is guaranteed, but there's no prevention in the First Amendment to hold those who unjustly bear false witness against another American that is severely damaging in its untruth. Our extremely intelligent legislators could surely craft a law that would pass muster. Why haven't they? I think for political purposes, they like it open-ended, just like it is. Politics have become so dirty, so nasty, and so divisive in America that maintaining the unfettered legal permission to go after one's political opponents in any way felt necessary is something they want to protect. Shame on them for that. It's time to have the ability to protect our integrity from lies, misrepresentations, and innuendo. Let's protect the truth and encourage its use in a public and open environment. While doing that, let's send a message that we encourage all to tell the truth all the time. The warning that goes with that is this: know for certain that if you lie about someone, there will be a price to pay. If it's true, feel free to tell it. But be forewarned, you're going to pay if it's not true. Hey, thank you for joining us here today. No, this wasn't politics. This wasn't the sleazy side of stuff that you often see and hear that we feel like, because of their importance, we've got to bring the truth to you. But still, it's very important for us to get our arms around what can and cannot be said or written or broadcasted in the United States when it's not the truth. There's got to be a price to pay. Americans deserve that. Remember this, you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Thanks for being here today at Truth News Network. We'll be back. Until then, have a great day. So long, everyone.
Your source of truth in a chaotic world. 24/7, online, on your devices. TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.